Web podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee at Leading Lee on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org. Hi, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Modern Web podcast. We are very excited today to have myself and Ben Lesh interviewing James Long, who was previously at Mozilla, right, James? And you just left.
Yep, that's right.
And we are excited to talk to you about browser tooling. And I think Ben has some trolley questions for you.
Of course.
Yeah. Ben, what are we talking to James about today?
Wait, why is it of course? Am I becoming famous for trolley questions?
Oh, no. It's good friends. It's awesome. I like it. Okay. It wouldn't be a good podcast without some trolley questions. So.
Okay. That's good.
The last podcast we did, Ben, was just like, so I don't mean to be mean, but I'm sorry about being mean, but
yeah.
And that's how we started every single question.
Well, it was about Polymer and web components. So I was,
oh, you're right. Right.
I mean, there's some stuff for me to pick on there.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great for anyone listening that likes that. But yeah. I still picked on it a little bit.
Well, now you can pick on Firefox, so it works.
I would, but I don't know anything about Firefox. I'm not sure I use it.
Oh man, here we go.
I'm just kidding. I'm teasing you.
That's awesome.
I'm teasing you. No, Firefox. I think it's been really important in web development because I think that browsers would still suck if Firefox hadn't come into existence. Period. Like. It's been a big deal, and I know that a lot of the work that you've been doing around like browser tooling, you and I'm sure a team of other people have been doing around browser tooling, has been a lot of the driving force, even with, you know, the Chrome tooling, right? I feel like for a while, Firefox and like other pieces of it, like Firebug and those sorts of things, were kind of pushing the envelope as far as developer tooling built into a browser, which is good. I think before that it was what, like IE had really good developer tooling, but it was not the best browser, right? It didn't support a whole lot of features, and the features it did support, it supported in like avant-garde ways. So yeah, I feel like Firefox has really kind of pushed that. So I wasn't thrashing on Firefox at all. But you've been a big part of that. What did you do at Mozilla?
I worked for Mozilla for 6 years, and I had three different roles, and they were all pretty different. The first 2 years I worked actually as like the single guy who maintained Mozilla.org, the website, and it was kind of cool because I like felt very important, right? Because Mozilla.org was like our website. But I think that only lasted a little bit because I was like, when it comes down to it, it's just like a really dumb static PHP website. So it wasn't really, I don't know. There's some scale issues there. Like it got a lot of requests per day and everything like that. But when it really came down to it, it just wasn't that interesting. So when Firefox OS, we started talking about doing that. I gradually did some more web dev stuff. I helped out on like the add-on site and things like that. But then when Firefox OS started, I transitioned to a team which was called Apps Engineering, which was just like a generic title for like do cool stuff with Firefox OS. And so we would try to write Firefox OS apps and figure out what's wrong with them. And I didn't really love that role either. It just felt too, I like having a product that I work on that's more of a focused product. So about 2.5 years ago, I switched, I think it was that long, about to the developer tools team, which was really, my biggest impact was able to make there at the dev tools team. Because that just had a lot more realistic product that I could actually make changes to, and a lot of people would be happy about those changes, or probably most likely mad. And so I worked on the developer tools team, mostly on the debugger for those 2 years, just, you know, trying to wrench it out of like this old oil pit of like messy Zool code, just trying to clean it up and make it actually work well. So I don't know if you want to ask me more specific questions than that. I'm happy to talk about it.
I'm a little curious what Zool code is. I don't actually know what that is.
Oh really? Yeah. So it's, I, you like, if if I say that to somebody who knows what it is, I can't see you right now, but usually they cringe because Zool is this old Mozilla technology. It's XUL, and it's actually named after, I'm not going to get this right, but some old like sci-fi alien monster that's like this terrible, gross monster. And he like I think he says there is only Zool when he's like that's like one of his taglines because it's like this demon that comes and it's kind of funny. I think the Firefox engineers just especially the old school ones really like doing these like demonic things. It was just sort of this hack to extend the platform, the web platform, with more native looking things. So you could actually, it's basically the first version of web components. So Zool had, Zool was Firefox's specific technology to, you sort of wrote Firefox, like the whole UI of Firefox is actually written in Zool, which is sort of like the web, but it's extended with all of these native capabilities like context menus, like panels that resize when you drag them, just things that are a lot more powerful than what the web used to have. But these days, it's completely outdated by like modern frameworks and web components is sort of a natural, like probably web components is a more like much more standardized version of what Zool was trying to do. But the worst part about Zool is that it's like this large piece of the Firefox engineering code base that is just super buggy, completely unmaintained. Nobody really knows how it works anymore. The way it interacts with, like, you can actually have Zool elements in a normal HTML page and they interact, like, it's actually a different XML namespace. And you can have it, the XHTML elements and the Zool elements on the same page and they interact in, like, CSS and layout. And when they start interacting, like, you get into these really weird edge case bugs that are completely mind-boggling, like, how it floats something. It's supposed to float it to the right, but it actually like inverts it or something. It's terrible.
Oh God, I've looked up this, I've Googled this, and I'm looking at some of the stuff, and yeah, I've, yeah, we're, I'm gonna back away slowly.
it's awesome. Yes, please do. I've done my part and I'm glad to be moving on, to be honestly. So
right. So, but you now the developer tooling with, inside of Firefox has been moved off of that, right? Like it's now, is it now React based? Because I know you're a big fan of React, so I was wondering if that is kind of the way things have gone.
Yeah, so we've it took a while, but we've like any new code is written in React for sure. But there's unfortunately when you have a really large complex code base like the DevTools, it just it takes a long time to move it all off. And so it's the debugger is completely written in React in a normal HTML page now. The console is like halfway written in React. The inspector is still old Zool code, and all of the other I think the memory tool is all React now. But like half of two-thirds of our tools are still old Zool-based tools, just because it's like, I mean, who has time to actually sit down and rewrite everything from scratch? Like we're already trying to rewrite as much as we can, but there's just no way that you were able to. So I think Zool is going to stick around for at least another couple of years, because it's just hard to get off it, you know?
Well, but you're working on things that other developers use. You mean you don't have time to just rewrite everything?
Yeah.
Like all day, you don't just work on code all day?
No, luckily I would try to convince my coworkers of that, but no, luckily they would bring me into reality.
Right on. So, are you a little sad that you're going to be leaving Mozilla before that's all converted over to React? Was that ever a goal of yours?
It was so my that whole project is just incredibly complex because we deal with we have to interact with the platform people to, you know, implement the right APIs and then bridge them over bridge C++ APIs over to our DevTools backend. And it's so complex that I sort of isolated myself on the debugger because I was like, I'm just going to make this work. I'm just going to make this debugger the best debugger possible. And like I feel like I made that happen. Like we actually rewrote the debugger front end completely in React and Redux, and that shipped and that's in nightly right now. And so that was sort of my I'm happy with the impact that I had. So it's good.
So what do you see coming down the pipe then for browser tooling? Like what do you think exciting is gonna happen next?
I think one of the things that might be the most impactful is standardizing the protocol so that tools and browsers can all sort of work together and actually talk to each other. Because one thing that's terrible right now is that the Firefox has its completely own protocol. The Chrome protocol is pretty much used everywhere, like Safari, and I think Edge is even talking about using it, or they already are using it. Chrome obviously uses it, but even though those have been using it for a while, they each use different versions that are all like sort of ad hoc added to. And so it's very hard to actually get tools to, like, when you connect to Chrome, which version of Chrome is it that you're connecting to? Well, which version of the protocol are you using? Sort of depends on the Chrome version. But Chrome doesn't give you any way to actually version that protocol, which is terrible. So, like, you don't actually know what protocol to actually talk. And so it's a big problem with tooling. It's a big problem with, like, if you want to switch browsers and you already have like your Vim or Emacs connected to your browser, you can't determine, like, you can't easily just connect to Firefox instead. And I think Chrome is working on actually adding versions so that when they make a change to their protocol, they will actually increase the version. And I think Firefox is working on adopting the Chrome protocol. That's going to be a long project as well. And as far as I know, I think Edge is even talking about adopting the Chrome protocol as well. So I think that's going to be really cool, because I think then we can write tools that actually aren't just like Chrome specific. And trying to think otherwise, I think some other exciting things that I saw happening at Mozilla, which is still sort of a prototype, but there's actually a thing called reverse debugging, which means you can actually pause on an exception and actually step backwards. And once you start using debuggers that act like that, it sort of feels like that's just the way the debugger should always work, because you almost never want to step forward. You always want to be like, so I got in this weird state. How do I go backwards and see what actually happened? How did I get into this weird state? And that's like super complex with JavaScript, because JavaScript is very mutation-y and all, like, I'm just going to poke things around and change things all over the place. As far as I know, I think Edge is working on something like that. I could be wrong. Mozilla has a prototype working, and they're working on landing it right now. So I think that's going to be super cool when that lands. So those are two things that I think are going to be pretty exciting.
That's pretty interesting. It makes me wonder, like, how they'll handle situations like, oh, I don't know, like either like date time now or request animation frame, right? But you step backwards and execute the code, the value is going to be different, right?
Right. Yeah. So you can't execute code at that, right? Like if you type date.now in the console, when it's paused at a previous breakpoint, like, it's going to be the current time. It's obviously not actually traveling
Right,
through
right,
time,
right, right.
which would be awesome. But like if you typed, yeah, that would be certainly an achievement. But if you had, like, var x equals date dot now at a certain point, and you stepped back to that point, yeah, sure, you could inspect x, and it's, whatever it was at that time. So it's more for inspecting the state of the program at that time more than anything else.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, that does sound really cool. That does sound really cool. So, like, if everybody's standardizing on the Chrome protocol, then, I mean, Node uses the same protocol, does it not?
Yeah, it does
Is it
now.
like,
As of Node
yeah.
6.3, I think, they merged in
Okay.
the Chrome protocol. It's pretty cool.
So that means that you could use theoretically anybody's browser development tools to debug Chrome, right?
You mean debug Node?
Or to debug Node, yeah, to debug Chrome, duh. No, to
Right.
debug
Yeah, it's like, of course, duh.
Node,
Yeah, no,
yeah.
that's
Yo, dog, I heard you like to use Chrome to debug your Chrome. Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, I actually meant to mention Node. That's exactly why standardizing the Chrome protocol is incredibly important, because Node is an incredibly important piece of the web ecosystem, and it's weird that we feel delighted to be able to debug Node. It's weird that we haven't been able to do that from the very first version of Node, to be honest. But yeah, it's finally coming, so it's good.
Yeah, I kind of wish that there was more of a standard way to create add-ons for developer tools, and I wish this because I work on RxJS, right? And RxJS, like, debugging what's happening in RxJS or anything like it even promises is it's complicated, and you end up having a lot of like library code in your call stack, and it's not always readily apparent what the timing of certain things are, and it's been asked of me several times, like, well, can we make like a Chrome extension or something to help debug RxJS? And like, if I was going to go about doing that now, and I'm not an expert on this, but I would probably make some sort of Chrome extension that injected a script that hooked into RxJS in some way and had actually sent things over to some add-on that was running to kind of graph out what was happening in your observable chain. But it seems to me like that should be way easier than what I'm thinking of. Like there should be some kind of standardized way to do this and actually have it work in Firefox and Chrome and Edge or whatever. Do you see anything like that coming down the pipe?
I don't think so, because it's just incredibly complicated. I mean, when you start actually dealing with the values of the JavaScript virtual machine, I mean, every single implementation of JavaScript is just completely different, right? I mean, there are basic techniques and theories that like a certain garbage collector or JIT might use across engines, but like when it comes down to the representation of JavaScript objects and have some way to query the JavaScript heap for these types of objects and construct some sort of complex graph, that stuff just gets incredibly complicated. It's hard enough for us to do it just for Firefox. I don't really see anything down the line that's really specific to. I mean, I think the protocol is really that point where you provide the standard abstract interfaces that say, get me the contents, like the properties of this JavaScript object or something like that. So that's sort of where we can collaborate on and standardize, like these are the things that add-ons have exposure to. They can actually call all of these protocol commands. So you can basically do as much as the protocol can give you, and we can standardize on the protocol and make that work. But it's true that like the protocol, like when you start getting into, I want to construct a specific representation of how these graphs, how these objects are connected in the heap graph, the protocol doesn't give you that. And usually when we want to do that with like the memory tool, we have to do a lot of C++ code to actually get at that in the engine. So I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. DevTools is just a very complicated, hard project. So, adding on sort of like, let's expose all this other stuff to add-ons is just kind of a hard thing. But I would love, like, there's a lot of people working on or that have ideas about how to make it easier for libraries and framework authors to do that kind of stuff. At least, like, we talked about some ideas about now that the debugger is written in React, it's way, way more composable than what it was. And so we could put theoretically allow some sort of hooks or extension points to where add-ons could actually customize the debugger itself. Because like some of what you were saying, right, like the debugger already does. It's just you want to customize how that data is shown.
Right, right.
But nobody's really worked on actually making that happen, so.
Right. I mean, like in Rx's case, for example, people have like some observable and then they'll filter and then they'll map and then they'll flat map or something. And when they're debugging it, I mean, really, they only really care about stepping to the function they pass to map, and then the function they pass to filter, and then the function that they pass to flat map. Like, they don't really give much of a crap about all the other code, and you can black box that in, I think, every browser nowadays, and that helps a little bit, but it doesn't give like a lot of visibility into like on a higher level of like, oh, well, what's happening with this thing, like timing-wise? Like, what fired when? Can I actually see, where I'm running into this weird concurrency issue that I'm hitting because you're dealing with async code, right?
Yep.
It's like those sorts of things, and I think I've seen stuff like that, like kind of toyed around with for promises. But I'm always hopeful to learn of some magic silver bullet tooling thing I can use to build it and just have it work everywhere, right?
Unfortunately so I have battle scars from dealing with breakpoints. I mean, I never knew how complicated breakpoints are, and so I sort of just empathize with why tools are just haven't gotten there yet, because it's just hard to figure out. I'm not going to go into it now because it would take 20 minutes to explain, but like even just figuring out how to set a breakpoint on a single line is pretty darn complicated. And then you throw source maps onto that mix, and it's just like, I don't know. I can't believe debuggers work at all, to be honest. I don't know. There's probably cool things that we could do. My head's a little bit out of that space just because I got burnt out on.
Yeah, I can imagine. I didn't even actually consider the source map. So you'd actually have to, somebody sets a breakpoint, and then you actually have to crawl back through source map world to figure out what actual line of code is being executed in some minified thing.
Yep. Oh my gosh.
And then what that actually maps to in the virtual machine, which is, like compiled, right?
I'm having PTSD right now. Stop.
That does sound pretty horrible. I'm sorry, James.
Yeah, no, it's no, it's fine. It's not actually, I don't know. I'm not really that burned out about it. It's interesting stuff. So the thing is that source maps, a single line in a source map can also map to multiple lines. So it's not only, it's like an M-to-N relationship between the lines. Like one source map line can map to many lines, and many lines in a source map can actually only map to one real line, right? So yeah, it's really hard stuff. I kind of wish we just figured out some other better format for source maps or something. I don't know what the right answer is, but all that to be said, yeah, I think there's stuff we can do that tools could do to at least help you. People like RxJS authors, Ember, React, to help do that. I'm not sure exactly what they are. I think we need to standardize the protocol first and just sort of see where we go from there. Maybe we can expose more and more in the protocol and just sort of see where that goes.
So now that you're leaving Mozilla, though, do you see yourself still active in the browser tooling world, or are you taking a break from that?
Yeah, probably not. Probably taking a break from it. It was just my head was so deep and down in it. I haven't really had any time to do any open source projects or any much time for side projects or things like that. So I think I'm going to shift my focus to just other more regular web development.
Right on. So what sort of open source are you looking at getting into? Are you going to contribute to RxJS? Oh my God.
I need to learn it first, to be honest.
We can arrange that. We can arrange that.
Yeah, no, that's true. I definitely like RxJS more and more. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure yet. I'm still sort of seeing. I need to. So I guess I'll say first that I am moving to doing contracting. So obviously I'm looking for work right now and trying to do that stuff. So that's sort of my initial focus, is to make sure that I can still make some money and actually do this. But I don't know. I think I would love to contribute to React, honestly, because like React is sort of my currently go-to framework, or library, I should say. And there's the whole React Fiber coming up right now, and so that seems like a lot of interesting work. And I'm actually pretty well suited for that, I think, because I've done work in the past on various languages that have sort of a similar ability to pause the current stack and actually restore it later. I've actually done a lot with that with in a language called Scheme, which has this thing called continuations. So React Fiber seems really very interesting to me. So I would love to contribute to React Fiber. I just haven't had time to start it yet.
What about this? You know how I don't know if React has the same tool, but Ember has Ember Inspector, and then Angular has Angular Augury. Does React have something similar?
Yeah, it's got a React DevTools that works in Firefox and Chrome.
Oh, okay. I just haven't dug deep enough into React. I was going to, but
Yeah, there's also like a companion, like a Redux inspector too. If you're using Redux with React, then you can see like the state of your store and like what actions were dispatched and other interesting things.
yep.
But yeah, they've got a pretty good amount of tooling. I think just as things get more popular, I wonder what kind of tooling Vue has actually. I haven't really dug into that. I have to imagine as popular as Vue has gotten, it probably has similar tools.
I haven't really. Has Vue gotten extremely popular, do you feel like? Because I feel like it's gotten a lot of hype, but.
It's definitely on an upswing. I saw that Evan Yu the other day had posted an article just about how, it's gone up probably fourfold in popularity over the last year. I see more and more people talking about it. It's
Oh, cool. Nice.
interesting because it's extremely lightweight and it seems to be very fast and powerful. So I haven't dug into it too deeply or built anything with it, but it is something I've got my eye on. Like it's even got some like a supported Vue supported RX add-in to support observables and that sort of thing. So I'm keenly interested to try a project with it. It's just, you know, like you, it's so busy doing other things at work that it's not like really high on my priority list, right?
Yeah.
Sounds like a good pairing session. if they have a CLI, I'm in.
Let's do it.
But I,
yeah, if you want exposure to technology you never ever use, Tracy will be like, hey James, let's pair on this project. I need your help with this. And then she won't tell you what it is, and then you'll start, and it'll be like something you've never used in your life. And it's like,
and then Ben's fatherly patience comes out.
Yeah,
that happens. You can tell that he's dealt with many young children and me before.
Yeah, well, it's good. That means that you're really good at picking up things probably pretty quickly.
No, you know what it really is now, because of my fortunate position at Netflix and working with RX, like I have enough connections in the open source community that after I fumble with like doing things the completely wrong way in say Ember or something for a while, we just like hit up somebody that is like either core team or close to the core team. Yeah. And they're like, no, you're wrong. And like in 5 minutes, they fixed all my problems. And then I learned something. But until then, I just beat my face off the keyboard like everybody else and just kind of hope for the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me go and read through the source code of this framework so I can figure out what the hell it's doing. Right. Like, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
Well, the other thing I found interesting about Vue and the popularity is I saw a poll recently, and it was, what framework do you use at work? And it was just Angular, Angular 1, Angular 2, Angular 1x, React, or Vue. And I was kind of sad because there's no Ember representation. You know, like nobody even thinks about, I think a lot of people don't even think about Ember as a thing anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame. Like Ember is a really great framework, and they've progressed it very steadily and towards modernizing it. And it's very performant for the most part in every major situation I can think of for developing an app. It's even really good at like, oh, I want to crank out an app in 5 minutes for like the 80% use case. Ember is fantastic. I think it suffered from a learning curve up front in the earlier versions of Ember that was steeper than Angular 1's, and that kind of pushed it out. And then, of course, you know how software development is something new comes out and it's shiny and everyone wants to use it. And I think that React and Vue right now kind of have that luster, maybe Angular 2 a little bit as well. But yeah, I mean, I give it like another 2 years, there'll be some other framework out that's really just derivative of five other frameworks with some new twist, and everyone will be like, React, why do you use that old crap? You know, like that's just how our industry is.
Yeah. And I think that actually means, I think that's when the framework or library has actually made it, because I'm actually, for the past year, I've been actually really looking forward to when React is sort of past this hype phase, because I got pushback from my team when I was first pitching React to do our code-based rewrite, because it sort of felt like, oh, you just want to rewrite it in the latest, you know, in this latest cool thing, of course. And I would like to think I'm a little bit more pragmatic than that I had actually evaluated it and think it's actually worthwhile. But I feel like the less hype something is, that the more accepting a lot of other people can be, because it just seems like it seems like when it's the latest thing, a lot of people just sort of pass it off as like, oh, you just want to do this cool thing that has the hype. So I could sort of look forward when React is this thing that might not be thought about as much anymore, but it's just like super practical. I feel like that's sort of where Ember is right now as well.
Yeah. That's probably true.
I think this is also exciting because we're hosting this thing called this.javascript.
No, that's not cynical at all, James. No, it's one of those things. Like people get really bent out of shape about what technologies they're using, and they get really, I don't know. Like I see some of that stuff in RxJS too. Like I see people like RxJS everything. Like they want to RxJS like literally every app that they work on, whether it needs it or not. And they make a big deal out of it, or they'll like, I've only rarely seen people be like, bacon is stupid, use RxJS, things like that. It's like, come on, like who really, like who cares? Yes, this other free software that's perfectly good is somehow not as good as the other free software that you're using. Just build something and shut up. I don't know. So I can't. It's. Is there any chance that I could twist your arm into? Because you're like, what, you got a couple of days left at Mozilla. Is that right, or are you all done now? Okay, so before January 4th, you can add RX tooling into Firefox, right? Like I can. All right. Yeah, so Redux Observable, so this is a shameless plug, but Jay Phelps and I work on a middleware for Redux called Redux Observable. And that actually, we added that into our app because at first we were building a Redux app on a different team I was at here in Netflix. And what it was is we were just like, all right, we'll just use React and nothing else until we get used to it because neither one of us had built a React app. So we did that. And we got to the point where the state management was just god awful. And we're like, okay, well, let's use Redux and see how that cleans things up. So we did. And then we, of course, hit the barrier of now all of our async stuff is still sprinkled into these components, and our components have like stateful things, but the stateful things are really only to track async things that are happening. And, you know, that's stupid because here I am on the team and I work on RxJS. Like maybe we can take some of that stuff and, you know, we'll build some sort of middleware around it. And what the amazing thing that happened with our apps when we moved to that Redux Observable middleware is it actually took all of the remaining code in our components and basically moved it to the middleware. And so, like, everything was now out of the component. The component was just a stateless component. It just was a function that rendered. And all of the business logic was elsewhere. And we're like, well, you know, now we could use, it doesn't even matter what we're using. We could use React to render this. We could, you know, render it with some template thing if we wanted. We could render it to native. It doesn't matter. Literally all of the business logic has been moved out and tested in this other code, but it still lives kind of next to it. So it was still clean. And that wasn't anything we planned on when we made it. It just kind of, we realized that it ended up that way. So there's my plug for that. If you still got async code in your React, using some sort of middleware, it doesn't even have to be Redux Observable, but I'm assuming the same thing happens with like Redux Saga or Redux, what's the other one? Maybe possibly Redux Thunk, I don't know. But you end up moving all of that async stuff out of your components as well, and it becomes cleaner. Yeah. Why do you say unfortunately use promises? Tell me more. Of course. Anytime someone wants to talk about that stuff. Yeah, you're talking about the promise error trapping behavior. That weirdly enough, that actually might be introduced into subscribe only, not necessarily for each, but well, for each returns a promise, but it might be introduced into observables, at least as per the proposal, because this is the weird thing. What ends up happening is when you've got a multicast scenario, which is what a promise is, if you've got a cancellation like an observer does, what happens is that you have an error, and if the error gets reported back up the stack to the point of multicast, if everything that's happening down the one multicast branch is totally synchronous, which it can be in observables, it goes all the way back up, stops notifying everybody else listening to the multicast, and kills the multicast. And so it's like you're interfering with the producer of the data, even though you're a consumer. And it's this really weird thing where I had to concede, like, well, maybe the trapping thing actually has to be done. But I mean, it's still like that's still kind of we're in it's in its infancy and exploring like what we're going to do about that. I mean, ideally, it's something where we don't run into the situation like what you're talking about, where people are using observables in their tests for some reason, and they fail and swallow it, and they have no idea that their test is failing. Like that's not good. So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that things like zones J or what is it, zones JS or zones that is actually being proposed to the TC39 will be kind of helpful with some of that. Like as far as being able to identify in what area an error occurred, like you might be able to have test suites then that were spun up in a specific zone that were like, if any errors happen in this zone that were unhandled, then fail the test kind of thing. So I think that's kind of an interesting development on that front that'll help with things like promises and if observables have to have this behavior. I'm still not entirely certain that observables have to have this behavior though, because event target, if you look at DOM elements, you can actually register an event handler, trigger it and unregister it all in the same job on the event loop. So it's totally synchronously. And it'll actually execute all of its handlers synchronously too. And if any of those handlers throw, that error gets reported to the browser, but it doesn't actually bubble up. It doesn't propagate back to, the frame of code that you're in and break everything. Like it allows things to continue executing. So clearly there's methods of doing that sort of thing where you still report an error that'll cause a test to break, but I don't know if it'll break a test. It makes me want to write a unit test and see if it breaks, but don't have that, oh, I have to go register some global handler to see if anything happened type behavior. But again, zones will, if zones land in JavaScript proper, that kind of fixes some of those problems too. So I don't know. Nerds. Tracy, you know what we can do? I think we should do a podcast on specifically on open source and the lives of open source maintainers and get like a bunch of people on. We'll bring James back for that. No. There's, well, either one, actually. We'll get James and James just to make it extra confusing. We should ask Stefan Penner too, because you want to nerd snipe somebody. That's you get Stefan Penner going about open source. Yeah. his eyes will glaze over. He'll get the thousand yard stare. Flashbacks. Where can we find you on Twitter? Yeah, that's really something.
Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter at modernweb_. See you around the internet.